snackies.
That's what it says here.
Snackies.
To share and a willingness to ask questions and make suggestions. Again, this is Running a Free School at the Big Yellow House, 742 North Brantford Avenue, Sunday, January 21st, 11 to 2 p.m. And if you have any questions, you can email freeschool at freeschoolsc, that's freeschoolsc, at riseup.net. Also, classes going on through preschool through January, so check out your calendars around town, or you can go online at http://santacruz.freeschool. Again, that's freeschool.org for more information. So, all right, friends, hope to see you on Sunday then.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM or www.freakradio.org, it's Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides, the January 18th, 2007 edition, with special guests Bob Patton and possibly Tenderfoot Tim Rumford coming on the air, plus a nearly live interview with Mayor Smiley Emily Riley. Stay tuned.
Take the side of freedom, know your enemy. It ain't hard to do, they speak on our TV. They own the radio, they own the magazine. As they make the world sick with their disease. Well, they're selling promises to the working man, who's signing contracts that you don't understand. They got them tied down, working overtime, hoping that the ends will meet somewhere down the line. Somewhere down the line we're gonna have to make a stand. Our drain's gonna wash away the blood upon the land. Where the tears are falling now, a raging sea will flow, singing the most perfect song the world could ever know. Still arresting anyone who's making noise. Enjoy your freedom, but just don't raise your voice. Live your life in silence, work till you're 65. Always chasing dreams that you will never realize. You're working for the dollar that they'll just take away, and line their pockets with the money that you save. As the market crumbles, they're still getting fat. Go watch a movie and forget about that. Somewhere down the line we're gonna have to make a stand. Our drain's gonna wash away the blood upon where the tears have fallen now, a raging sea will flow, singing the most perfect song the world did ever know, singing the most perfect song the world did ever know.
And welcome to Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides. That's from Election Day USA. Somewhere down the line, old number 8 is the singer, whoever he may be. Anyway, as mentioned before, this is Free Radio, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides, my 2 hours of rant, interview, the occasional guest, and a few words from the high and mighty. Today we have Mayor Emily Riley, who consented to an interview with human rights organization workers Bob Patton and Bernard Klitzner. And we're going to be playing that tape. In the studio with me is Bob Patton. Hi there, Bob.
Hi, Robert, and listening audience. Hope you're all having a good New Year's.
Indeed. Particularly those of you freezing outside in the cold under Emily Riley's sleeping ban. which I call Emily Riley's sleeping band because, interestingly enough, when she was elected in 2000, there was a majority with her to change that law. She chose instead to join the forces of darkness and remains on that particular side of the issue, unfortunately. Maybe she's listening and will call in. Mayor Riley, call home, or perhaps call homeless. Let's hear what you got to say. But I guess what we're going to do here is play this tape. Bob, I guess you got this interview, just this afternoon after making an appointment. How long did it take you to have this appointment happen?
Actually, the appointment came up pretty quickly. We asked her maybe 2 weeks ago, confirmed the meeting for 4:45 today, and everything went off smoothly.
And like the two prior mayors, Rotkin and Matthews, unfortunately, who are both still on the council, Emily Riley agreed to have this whole thing recorded, right?
Correct.
Of course, she didn't ask her whether she'd give you a list of her the people she'd talked to in the last month or of her upcoming engagements in the next month, I take it. That subject didn't come up, but he's shaking his head bashfully. No, I mean, actually, we had a kind of some of us schemed about this yesterday at the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, even though we're talking about another organization, human rights organization, meeting with Emily Riley. And we kind of ran some suggestions by Bob, which he was actually soliciting. And that's something that I didn't think of, but that usually I ask the mayors because that's required in other cities, and it's required under the state law, as I understand it, that a mayor under the Sunshine Act has to reveal her calendar. She has to reveal the lobbyists and people she's spoken with in the last month, as well as her planned public engagements for the next month. And I suppose we'll have to ask Emily this in the days ahead, but so far, past mayors have refused to do this. Mike Rotkin, for example, claiming that it would just give us an opportunity to protest his events. A very democratic American approach. Well, perhaps it is an American approach. It's you know, these days. But anyway, Emily Riley, an interview with her. In order for an ordinary person to make an appointment with Riley, what do you just walk into the mayor's office or give her a call? What's the procedure?
Walk or call in, I assume. My partner, Bernard Klitschner, did make this appointment himself, so maybe he'd call in and give you a little advice about how to get your appointment. But most of the mayors have been pretty forthcoming, at least with your initial contact with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's appropriate for politicians to do that. I will note that Emily Riley did not allow me to speak as an organization for the five-minute period at a hearing for the... actually an administrative hearing for the $700,000 giveaway to the Parks and Rec last Tuesday or a week ago Tuesday when City Council had that item on its agenda. But she did say that if you were representing an organization and you spoke to her beforehand, she would allow that. So for those of you who do represent organizations and want a little more time before they rubber stamp whatever it is that the staff has laid before them to okay, know that you will have that opportunity to make your feeble protest before it whisks past them into law, actually, or into the established policy. So, in case you are listening to this tape, we're about to play Emily Riley's interview of actually about an hour and a half ago, right? 4:30 you saw her today.
Yeah.
I want to remind you that if you have any thoughts on this, you can call the station, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, 427-3772, or if you want, you can call Emily Riley directly. Now, she won't be there probably, but you can leave her a message. They have a 24-hour voicemail, and that number is 420-5020. Again, 420-5020. So you might want to commend the mayor on her fine ideas, criticize her for what she doesn't say or what she does say and what she doesn't do, or criticize. Well, you might have any number of reactions, but in any case, that's the number, 420-5020, if you want to call the mayor, 427-3772, if you want to call the studio. And if you want to leave me a message offline off air, I should say, because you want to, you know, have a little more surreptitious discussion, or you're a little bashful or whatever, or you have something you don't want to talk about on the air, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also my home phone number. Give me a call, but try not to do it at 3 in the morning. Anyway, here we go with Emily Riley, Bernard Klitschner, and Bob Patton. Two homeless activists visit the mayor with some serious questions.
January 18th, 4:47, Bob Patton, Bernard Kwitzner of the Human Rights Organization, and Mayor Emily Riley. Bernard, you want to go ahead with your question?
Yes, Emily. Has the city attorney, Mr. Barisoni, advised you or the council, you know, about the Jones decision?
Have you seen the memo that he sent us about that?
One small paragraph from it, from website. But if you have a memo there,
yeah,
Now, for those who don't know, the Jones decision is a decision in Los Angeles that makes it inappropriate and illegal, in fact, unconstitutional, to arrest homeless people or cite them for sleeping unless you have a shelter bed for them, particularly in the evening. Bob?
Some of the points will be made in the rest of the tape because we were trying to get on the same page with Emily Riley so we could move into the more serious conversations. So some of that will be covered on the tape.
Yeah, for those of you who have been following us, you know, in this station, in this particular program, it's an old story, but the Jones decision is a very important federal decision in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that is currently existing law. So the city's sleeping ban is really unconstitutional under the current law if anyone had the legal power or will to challenge it. And city attorneys in both Los Angeles and San Diego and Richmond, California, have advised their mayors that they had best not violate this decision. And in fact, Richmond changed its law. We'll be talking about this later in the program. You'll be hearing some of this discussion with Mayor Riley. Tactically speaking, Bob, were I in the room, I would have stopped her from going to try to get the document and said, well, what's your recollection of it? Because the minute that she went out to get the document, you knew she would run into the city attorney and the city manager, and they would say, keep it in confidence, which apparently is what they did. They're going to claim this is a confidential document. Here we go.
And Emily stepped out the office just for a moment to get us the asked for statement from the city attorney. Returning to the tape, currently reading some items from news to Emily, so we understand we're on the same page. I'm currently reading about the Richmond decision to review their laws. Councilman Jim Rogers says that the case made it clear that we do not have an illegal ordinance. We need to have an ordinance we can enforce, and in order to enforce it, we have to have a legal number of beds. These are the things that I wanted to make a point about, is the shelter availability. The Richmond mayor, Maria Balmotis, I'm sorry about that, it should be repealed. The vice mayor said the federal court has already thrown it out. The only reason for us to keep it would be to make a statement, and we should really think about what that statement is. Trying to give you some idea what other people in your position or similar positions are thinking and saying. Now we'll come local. It's a pretty tight decision, but we only need one good case to break the whole thing open. Homeless advocate Kate Wells. More local. The LA law is the most broad sweeping of any ordinance of its type in the country, explains John Barisoni of Santa Cruz. Quote, I haven't recommended any action to our city council. Other things that have happened is the San Diego police changed its stance on public sleeping. The city attorney, Aguiar, has stopped locking up homeless people who have been cited for sleeping in public. A change in protocol that comes amid the growing debate over whether the conditions, citations are constitutional. And you're welcome to look through these articles if you like. We did those as a basic research. We have been in contact with some people who are close to the LA attorneys, close to Carol Sobel. And Sobel says, says that the Jones, who worked on the Jones decided decision, says the Jones case is both law and precedence at this very moment. Now, sure, the L.A. attorney, Delgado, has indeed recently filed a petition for rehearing, which is being reviewed by the court currently. Until and if Delgado's petition is granted, the case is law and precedent. So this is what we're concerned about, particularly in getting that statement from the city attorney. Now here's another one. This is Don Zimmerman.
And just interrupting briefly, the information we learned, Bob, that I talked to an attorney today in Northern California who was a part of the Fresno successful lawsuit to overturn the seizure of homeless property and is to actually get an injunction, a preliminary injunction against it, the so-called Kincaid decision in Judge Wanger's court. And Elisa de la Plena said that, and is confirmed by a couple of other attorneys, that in federal court, unlike in state court, once you have a decision at a lower court, it does not change until it's overturned by a higher court. So if they accept it for review, it will remain good law until they overturn it. So we may have a longer period where it's good law than we think, and we'll be talking about that later in the show. We had thought, and I put out the misinformation myself, that we only had this the moment until they accepted it as something that they were going to review, and then it would no longer be good law, but would be in question depending on what their review would be. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is supposed to be hearing this by February, by next month. Of course, they were actually supposed to hear it last August, so they're continuing to postpone it because there was settlement discussions between the ACLU defendants in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles city attorney, city police chief, and city mayor. But we'll talk more about that. Here again is Emily Riley, Bob Patton, and Bernard Klitzner discussing the Jones decision. And I guess, Bob, you're quoting from Don Zimmerman, a local ACLU attorney.
ACLU.
You're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
The Ninth Circuit 2-1 split panel decision was decided 9 months ago, and I am unaware of any reason, absent of judicial stay of the decision pending appeal, why it is not applicable case law throughout the Ninth Circuit's judicial, yeah, including the court, of course, California. And more recently, there's been a couple incidents that happened because of the deprivation of the rights of homeless people, and they're being under attack in many cities, to the point to where in South Bend, Indiana, where they just found 4 people stuffed in the manholes after, you know, a spate of a lot of homeless bashing, they're deciding whether they should make homeless bashing, not the bashing of head, but hate crime law include homelessness. Something that we'd like to see, that Nevada is getting doing. They have both legislators, lawmakers, and community people in Carson City doing a camp out to try to get laws that are acceptable as human rights laws. Now, this is a copy of the Richmond law as it has been changed. And I marked for you on there the stipulations they put in that the police officers follow when trying to determine whether or not a person is actually in violation of the law. The first articles I read to you were from a time when they were anticipating to have to change the law. And this is the actual change law. Mm-hmm. That happened in September or something. Had a little tough time getting through the system to actually find that because they hadn't updated their computer. Once again, Don Zimmerman and some email contacts. Kate Wells, I'm sorry. We can please go ahead and read that if we've got the time. I just don't.
It's okay. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Kate Wells, they asked her to check again because she was not quite sure about if that was case law or not. I just checked with my legal search engine, and Jones' case is listed as precedent with no overruling or superseding authorities. Okay, so that wasn't enough. We had to get a hold of Don Zimmerman again. I'm unaware of any reason, absent any judicial stay, of the decision pending appeal, why it is not applicable case law throughout the Ninth Circuit. You know, it might have been the same one, same type of thing he came up before. And once again, this is stuff that we would like to have you address when it comes to particularly seeing what it is that the city attorney has come up with. And this, other than all that, this is what we're requesting. And it, what you're talking about, some of it may be already available.
Okay.
So this is our official request.
Okay.
At the end of this meeting.
Okay.
And that reads, the Human Rights Organization is asking for an opinion letter from the city attorney on legal questions about the Santa Cruz camping ordinance weighed against the Jones versus City of Los Angeles decision of finding the LA sleeping ban law unconstitutional. This letter should be published and made available to the public. Because there is no stay or pending litigation on this decision, this looks like good law, no matter how thin the read of the law. The ruling made by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals states, unless there is available shelter beds, cities cannot enforce laws that ban sleeping in public. We ask that the City of Santa Cruz Police and Rangers stop all enforcement of the camping ordinance as L.A., San Diego, and Richmond, California.
I'm sorry.
Sure, that's okay.
There are a couple of things. And if she gets it before you leave, I'll give it to you.
No.
If she doesn't, should I mail it to this address?
Yeah, or you can call. I can give you my telephone. You can call me. I'd be willing to pick it up.
Okay.
And that's Bob.
City supposed to get.
And that's 3.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of is that we have recently gotten through Public Records Act from the police department. Kate Wells helped us get their all the records they had for the past, or since the Jones decision was passed, of the citations and such that was given out. A little over 100 in that 9 months. So that was
from the police.
Yeah,
here now.
From the police. Well, we also then got the citations from Lone Ranger Wallace, near 300 in those same period of time. So at least Mike Watkins, ever 30 citations a month, I think, is way off. It's more like 40 to 45. So that was an eye-opener thing.
Tell her about the blanket part of it. Yeah.
Well, we're going through it now. And we find some pretty startling inconsistencies. One is that he gives tickets out for the sleeping of the blanket ban part after the hours are over with. The part is like 3 and 4 hours later. Now, the courts may not even read the law well enough to know it, but I think these tickets are going through on these people, even though the citation is not particularly legal within the time.
And it sounds like what you're saying is that the report that we get that shows the monthly incidents doesn't include the Rangers tickets. Is that what you're suggesting? Because
we don't know.
That could be.
Okay.
I think if it's only a police report,
is it not only Ranger but also the city police that's handing out tickets for blankets after the.
We haven't seen that with the.
Okay,
police.
So it's just Ranger
so far.
Okay.
And is this one of the things that was referred to during public comment or communication? Maybe not last week. I think it was the time before last week.
We've just got.
You or was it Robert?
It could have been Robert.
Somebody specifically mentioned the Ranger. And so I'm just wondering if
I bet it was I bet it was Robert.
However, I think we've only been done the analysis for a week, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
It could have been, and we are finding things like he, I don't know, illegal, but at least bothered us. He targets groups of women on several occasions that were probably trying to stay together for safety, and forcing them to break camp and, you know, move out of the safe area. But to me, that was a personal little bit of, I thought that was a little bit too tough, tough action. But anyways, that's just some of the things we're beginning to observe with, you know, the Lone Ranger Wallace situation.
Do you,
oh, please.
Emily, do you have any preliminary thoughts on this? I don't know if, to my knowledge, you haven't put out a political position on this field of decision or the sleeping camp.
It seems to me from that the Jones decision doesn't apply to the City of Santa Cruz ordinance because their ordinance is so different. But I would not presume to make that judgment myself. I'm not an attorney. I follow the city attorney's advice when he gives it to us. I know when I read things and I think things are different, I make my own opinion about it, but that doesn't mean it's right, you know. And I think that, it's not a good enough answer. But my answer is that until we start to address homelessness and acknowledge homelessness as a country, as a state, and people really get together and agree that we're all in this together, the City of Santa Cruz is just not going to be able to solve the problem all by ourselves. We just can't do it. We need an adult shelter.
I want to pause here for a moment. I mean, of course, we can all talk about what she's saying. This is Mayor Riley talking about the sleeping ban. Of course, nobody's suggesting, she's shifting the issue, nobody's suggesting she solve the problem. The issue is simply that she stop further punishing people for engaging in life-sustaining behavior, which is sleeping. And she's not addressing that issue at all, except to essentially recite what Rotkin and Coonerty have said, which is that the Jones decision overturns a broader law, and the Santa Cruz law is narrower, and therefore it doesn't apply to the narrower law. In fact, of course, the Jones decision makes it mandatory to allow sleeping at night in a section of Los Angeles. And the idea that that would not be the case in Santa Cruz, that they would not, that the court would not make the same decision because somehow Santa Cruz and homeless are not criminalized for sleeping during the day, although apparently Ranger Wallace is criminalizing people for sleeping during the day or covering up with blankets during the day during the pogo nip. It's an untenable argument, but it's one apparently the city council is sticking together with. Any thoughts on this, Bob? Or do you just want to, we'll continue with the tape.
Absolutely. You know, and the few beds we have available are not enough. I completely agree. We need to do better, and we're doing as well as we can.
You would not go as far as say that that's a violation of the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment?
No, I would not. I would say it was cruel and unusual punishment if we did not dismiss fines when we have no, when the armory is full. I'm really happy that we do that. I'm happy that we're funding the bus to get people up there. And yet, do I want it to be different? Do I want it to be easier for people to get there? Of course I do.
All right.
And again, this is something we've discussed on the air, the armory red herring. There is a provision in the sleeping ban law that says if the armory is full, then tickets given during that period of time will be dismissed. The armory is often not full because people don't use the armory situation because of a variety of reasons. We've talked about these on the air, ranging from the need for photo ID. You can't have a pet up there. You have to abandon your vehicle and your property and park it somewhere. The people would rather stay with it. Questions of illness in this kind of large, somewhat unhealthy situation in the armory. I don't know if they're allowing couples to sleep together or not. The kind of draconian police procedures you undergo when you go into the armory. The fact that if you work during the day, you cannot work past, I think, 3 o'clock. You have to line up at 3 or 3:30 or 4 o'clock to be able to go into the armory. There's a whole variety of reasons that make this excuse that Riley is using not a realistic one for homeless people trying to get out of homelessness or even people trying to survive on the streets. So that's, and she's using a number of conventional, you know, dodges that politicians use in sound bites. We would wish we could do better. Well, it's not a matter of doing better. It's a matter of avoiding doing worse. And the issue of, and here we're not just talking about being humane to people. We're talking about following the Constitution and following what the court has said the Constitution is. Now, Riley is falling back on, apparently, the city attorney's opinion, which Bob and Bernard were not able to coax out of her, but maybe we'll hear a little bit more about that later in this discussion. The city attorney has declared the city's position confidential. So the only way we're going to learn it is if we actually sue them, go to court, and then they'll give their position, I guess, or else they'll suddenly settle without going to court, which is often what happens in such cases. More from Emily Riley, earlier interviewed today, in this interview by Bob and Bernard.
You thinking, Bernard, you want to respond?
No way. So, Emily, if you were to get a legal position that ran counter to what you just said, that it was cruel and unusual punishment, and you had to abide by the Ninth Circuit, a lot of people on our side now say it's law, good law, as you probably are going to get tuned in fairly soon, or if you're not already.
I am aware of that.
All right. At that point, are you willing to work with us and do what you have to do to comply with the law?
I will do whatever I can to work within the constraints that are given to me by the city attorney. Absolutely.
Because at some point we think it's going to go on your main agenda, and probably fairly soon. You know, and we have to work together, you know, to make sure that, you know, that the homeless people, you know, we have a little less suffering.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish I had a magic bullet. I really do. I wish I had the answer. I spent months.
Actually, she does have a magic bullet. She should speak out the way some council members have spoken out, saying she disagrees with this policy and she feels the law, as it's written, is wrong and needs to be changed. That's what she said in 2000, in January and February of that year, before she ran for city council. Once in power, I should say once in the process of going into power, her position radically changed. To me, it's an example of simply the corruption of power and the corruption of office, and it's just a sad kind of thing to watch. It also makes one sort of angry because you know you're being lied to. Anyway, more from our mayor, Emily Riley, the baker of Santa Cruz.
When I was first on the council, I spent months trying to find a place to have a camp, following models of places that had happened, you know, the way things had been done in other places. And this city is so completely built out that I was unable to do it. I failed.
I don't recall, you asking any of the people I know, you know, for resources or help in that direction. Did you do this on your own, or did you have a committee?
There were several people involved. There were homeless advocates, there were city staff, there were parks and rec people and police officers. And
is this a formal committee, or was it informal?
It was informal.
Okay. So there was no direction from the council itself?
No. But as I've learned since I've been on the council, I can have a really good idea. But if I don't get, you know, other people, groups of people coming together to work something out that'll actually work, it doesn't go anywhere. So I was trying to find a place that we sort of had agreed on ahead of time, this, you know, this will work, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
If Riley did this search, she did it in the depths of the night without mentioning it to any other homeless advocate that I've ever heard of. So perhaps that happened. Perhaps she did this private search. And indeed, when I see her again, I'll ask her if I can remember what, you know, when and where she did this and with whom. And let's see what the reports were. But she may be remembering searches that were done by former Mayor Catherine Byers, or way back when by Celia Scott, in which they claimed Byers ended up saying there's just no place for them, the homeless, which of course is preposterous. There's all kinds of spaces that could be used, particularly if the courts decreed it. And in fact, Mayor Byers, now Citizen Byers, has said on different occasions that She actually would favor a lawsuit, even though she herself sabotaged a change in the sleeping ban when she was on the council, because apparently she didn't feel she had the political strength to be able to say, sorry, neighbors, you may be offended having homeless people having a campground, but they need it, and that you're just going to have to live with it. So that wasn't done. More from Emily Riley. If anyone remembers, by the way, this Riley committee that went around looking for spaces for homeless people, I'd like to know about it.
Yeah, well, the last statement here we have on our final statement is that we'd like to see the direction being taken like it has in Richmond, where the police have the facility and the wherewithal and the order to question people about, do they know the shelter exists?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a shelter available? So the officer needs to be able to call and or transport or arrange for transport the person who's willing to go. Now, to me, in the situation that exists here where there's no space for people to go to, that seems to be the very least consideration a person would be given that had no place to stay for the night.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no place to stay and there's no place offered or available, I mean, you really have no other choice. If that could be written into the law, at least when it comes to citizenry being able to know where they stand, where this community stands, is that, yes, we will give you a ticket if you won't go to the shelter when it's available.
Mm-hmm.
And no, we're going to have compassion. We're not going to give you a ticket if there's no place
mm-hmm.
to go.
Well, but given that right now, the ticket is given because sometimes a person might not know whether or not the shelter is full, right?
The officer.
So then, if you find out later that it is full, the ticket is dismissed. Excuse me.
Sure.
Yes,
sir. It was typically to release a document that's a privileged document of council meeting.
Okay.
So it might be comfortable with you as mayor just
That's what I wasn't sure about.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting this tape because that's apparently his city manager, Dick Wilson, and I can't hear what he's saying. What did he say when he came in?
He stuck his head in and told Emily Riley after she had asked to see the copy of the legal position from the city attorney and the city manager that came in and told her it was attorney-client privilege and that the whole of the city council would have to release, or I think he did say that they would give her or trust her in releasing it too. I don't remember exact wording, but we didn't get any positive response or copies of that
city statement. Manager for life, Dick Wilson, essence, stopped her from talking about what the city attorney told the city council was their position on the sleeping ban. So it's top secret until the city council releases it.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I mean, did you ask? Now we have to ask, has anyone asked Riley or gotten a commitment from Riley to put this on the agenda of the next closed session of the city council so they can discuss whether to let the public in on what Attorney Barisoni is recommending? Because Barisoni is recommending advice that's in opposition to the advice of the San Diego, the Richmond, and the Los Angeles city attorneys, three rather large cities with, I would assume, competent legal staffs, on how to deal with the Jones decision. All three of those cities have either changed their law or changed their police practices regarding the homeless, saying don't ticket them unless you got a shelter bed available. Not we'll drop the tickets later, because the damage is already done once you have ticketed someone and rousted them at night from their sleep. And also, of course, the whole issue of the fact that the armory isn't open. In fact, it's probably not likely. I mean, we're not even sure if it's going to continue to open. It's very expensive to keep the armory open. And to funnel that, to fund that, but it's not open 8 months a year. And that being the case, there's no provision for the other 8 months of the year, even for having tickets dismissed. And also, it puts the burden on the homeless person to run down. Meanwhile, you're looking for jobs, you're looking for clothes, you're looking for a place to do your laundry, you're looking for food. You're also supposed to run over to the city attorney's office, get his attention, and get him to dismiss a ticket, bringing him proof that the armory is full. I think not. And that's what attorneys from the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, if you may remember, Bob, advised us a couple months ago on the phone. That's completely inadequate. And would be so regarded by federal courts. So It also, I think, would be so regarded by ordinary people looking at the situation who aren't politicians trying to back up John Barisoni and Dick Wilson and some ancient position that was established 30 years ago when the sleeping ban was passed in 1978. So, more from the Emily Riley Dick Wilson show.
Thereafter,
the attorney-client privilege.
Okay.
When you disclose one, you waive the privilege. How widely you waive the privilege? I'm not so sure.
I'm not going to disclose it until it's public. But that's what they're asking for, and that's why I couldn't remember whether or not the. I was trying to picture the memo folded in half in my box, whether or not it had confidential.
Just to offer you the same closing letter again, or the counsel might like addressing the right one in public.
Okay, I'll ask him. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dick.
Emily,
I couldn't remember.
Can I follow up with a question on what you just said? Of course, ours from Richmond wants, the only real difference is there, you know, beforehand, you know, as opposed to knowing afterhand. But don't you think, well, first of all, do you have any official statistics on how many people, you know, have been released after the court knows, you know, that there wasn't any available shelter? How much people really know that they can do that,
mm-hmm.
and how much problem is that
mm-hmm.
to them? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, my understanding, homeless people, you know, I'm not homeless, but I hear they fight all day just to survive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is just one more obstacle in
yeah.
the thing, you
yeah.
know, where we could know before the possibility.
Yeah, right now there's no contact between the police on the beat and the shelter services.
Right, and the armory, yeah. So,
and
so
they don't even accept anymore.
Is there a way that the police could know
right.
when the shelter's full, if they could be told right away?
And
you know, it would save some bureaucracy too, to some degree, you know, because if you have to go through the court process, I mean, that's additional bureaucracy, right? And I understand that the city, it's going to cost city money.
Yeah, we have some of those sheets that are just kind of a letter, just a letter from Home Service Center that says that the shelters were full. There was no shelter available. However, the homeless person has to have the wherewithal to know that that's available
right.
to go to it, to go to court, and to
right.
get it. So there's a runaround for them.
And at a time in their lives when they're least able to be able to
And
deal
as
with
far
it.
As I know, the police officers, the shelters do not accommodate any walk-ins. You have to be down there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to sign up to get the 4 o'clock
right.
bus, which can only take so many people. And the rest of you go for it
yeah.
one way or the other.
Now, I know that's true, and that's I mean, it's all unfortunate. There's nobody who would disagree.
Yeah, this is all very unfortunate, isn't it? Yes, very unfortunate. It's interesting. I've been fuming over here and berating poor Bob here as this has been going on, because we realize that, according to Dick Wilson, he used this in order to stop Emily from saying anything, but it could have been used the opposite way. If she had revealed any part of that document, the whole document would have been public. And that means that, in essence, she had to be tricked into revealing a document that the public has the right to know. And, of course, that requires a strategic, I don't know what, it requires good luck, good fortune, and finesse to get the city to disclose. It's like getting Bush to, you know, to get past official secrecy shit. And the same thing is true, you know, at a local level. There's absolutely no reason why this stuff shouldn't be available for us to, you know, to look at, particularly since it affects so many people. You know, the claim that it's not even the subject of pending litigation. There is no litigation currently. There are two reasons why they keep stuff closed. One is if it's labor employee related, and the other is if it's in some sort of pending litigation. Now they're using what they call the attorney-client privilege. It's, you know, since this concerns the city's losing money, potentially losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in lawsuits, it seems to me to be not just a disservice to the poor and homeless people that it criminalizes and subjects, yes, to cruel and unusual punishment, but it also hurts the ordinary person who's going to suffer financially, at least insofar as we lose money because we don't have access to the information that might allow the public to say to the mayor, you know, change your mind on this one. This is not a good idea. Or to the city attorney, you know, get a new idea or we'll get a new city attorney. You know, I mean, that's sort of, but instead, all this is behind closed doors. And again, in order to get it out, you have to trick them. And that requires, you know, making sure that you don't ask them for the opinions of the city attorney or the opinions of this, but you just say, oh, what's your opinion on this? And get them to say something quickly and then pursue it without having their legal henchmen behind them. Bob?
Well, at least we know now that there has been some legal statement made, at least to the muckety-mucks in the high positions of the city lawmakers. We didn't even know that before. So you can berate me all you want.
You're a bad boy, Bob. You're very bad.
We found out something.
He's bad. He's very bad, folks. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, and you're listening to Emily Riley, our mayor here in Santa Cruz, talking to two human rights organization activists about the issue of the sleeping ban and whether it is constitutional, which it isn't, of course, under the Jones decision, and what the city intends to do about it other than say, gosh, it's unfortunate.
Engage the public, engage the community, engage your constituents in educating them about this situation. I think it's best to engage the public from the get-go. And that's one of the criticisms I have outside of this, is there's not very much transparency in this government. There's a lot of behind closed doors and secret meetings and stuff we don't know about until somebody tells, well, yeah, we met at the library a few months ago. You know, when the heck was that ever published? You know? So there's things like that going on. There's something wrong here.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming in, and I will. I certainly will ask the question. The questions that you bring up, find out what I can release publicly. I'll ask the city attorney to do that. I'll talk to the council about whether or not they're willing to release it.
Okay, that memo might not be public.
Yeah. See, that's what I wasn't sure about, and that's what Dick just said. He said that was a confidential client privilege document. That means that the council has to decide whether or not, or the city attorney has to advise us on whether or not it should be made public.
Well, we have our request on that, but that'll help push it in that direction. We sure do think the public should know what the main attorney is thinking.
Well, I will do what I can.
Would you like any of this to review?
I have that already.
Okay,
actually,
thank you.
And so that was Bob and Bernard getting down with Emily Riley this afternoon at the Santa Cruz City Council. Any reactions out there in Radio Land? 427-3772 is the phone number to call in. 427-3772. While I'm awaiting your calls, I think I'm going to ask our mayor, Emily Riley, if she'll put it on the next agenda for the next closed agenda. And we'll see if we can actually do that.
She picks the phone off the hook now.
And you can actually, it could be. I'm having a little trouble getting through here. Yeah, there's a...
Glitch in the phone.
Glitch in the phone line. Well, if you have any phone calls, call in. Actually, I will. I think what I'm going to try to do is try to call in and see what I can do here. Let's see if we actually can hear this on the air.
Offices. We are currently unable to answer your call.
This is me calling the city council and requesting, as you can do, you can make the same request, 420-5020.
Press 1. For hours of operation and to leave a message for the mayor or any council member, press 2. For the city clerk hours of operation. Thank you for calling the City of Santa Cruz Council office. Our office hours are Monday through
it's
Friday.
It's kind of
it's
a maze to go through, as you can hear.
From 1 p.m.
to
5
still do
p.m.
It.
If you know your party's 4-digit extension, you may enter it at any time. If you are calling from a rotary phone, you may leave a message at the end of this recording.
So we're waiting
please
to get
choose
Emily's.
Choose one of the following 8 options.
Emily's number.
After leaving a message, you may press 0 to return to the main menu. To leave a message for the entire city council, press number 1. To leave a message for Mayor Emily Riley, press 2. To leave a message.
And, of course, unfortunately, I just hung myself up. But you can do it. Give a call to Emily Riley at 420-5020 extension 2, and you will be able to, I think you first have to push 2 and then push 2 again, and you can get a hold of her voicemail and request that it be on the next closed agenda, which I'm going to do myself later when I'm not so butterfingered and not dealing with such temperamental equipment. If you want to talk about this, if you can call in 427-3772. Looks like we do have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello? Howdy, this is Gregory.
Hey, Gregory.
I'm on the air.
You are on the air.
Good. I want to call in to commend Bob and Bernard. They did an excellent job. I think they did an outstanding public service in speaking to him. Plus, I wanted to save Bob from you, since you were grinding on him. I want to commend them for their excellent effort.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bob is looking very pleased.
It's definitely true that our local structure of government is absolutely aware of the Jones decision, and they're just working behind the scenes, huddling, trying to figure out what they're going to do about it. So I wanted to basically say outstanding job to Bob and Bernard. They were non-confrontational, but they were direct, you know, polite, firm, and, you know, Emily was interesting listening to her, kind of meek and demure, you might say, but I don't know if that's really true, how she really is, but at least she listened, and they're definitely put on notice. We are very much concerned with this issue, and they're going to feel the heat. All right, is that it?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
I just did. You got something to say.
Well, I will say it as I continue ranting and raving.
Well, God bless. You could keep up the good work, Robert.
Thanks, Greg.
Good night, brother.
Bye-bye. And by, Greg?
Yes?
Do you have any reports from the street? I heard yesterday that the police arrived at the drum circle next to the farmer's market. Did you hear any stories? I know you do a Wednesday night Safe Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression event in front of New
Lee. Well, we were jamming out there all right. We had a great time in front of the Echo Good storefront. But I was at the drum circle earlier that evening, somewhere between, I guess, 5 and 6 p.m. And at that time, then, there was no law enforcement at all. They were playing away, having a good time, and there was food being distributed. And then I had moved on, so if they were accosted either before or after that, I'm unaware of that.
Well,
all right. There was a situation down the street, basically in front of the, was it the Real Theater right there on Pacific? Where about? Six officers were involved in
the Rio Theater?
One person.
You don't mean the Rio, you mean the, what, the Del Mar? The Del
Mar? Yeah, the Del Mar, I guess so. I did sort of witness that, but I was busy jamming and singing.
So Food Now Bombs is now serving again on Wednesday in front
of... Well, they certainly were there yesterday.
Excellent, because I heard there were some concerns. I suppose if folks want to help out, they can go to the Chavez Collective at 123 Main Street at noon and help cook free food with Food Not Bombs.
That's excellent. I didn't catch where they were, but I certainly thanked the chef.
Yeah, unless they've changed their kitchen, but I think it's the Chavez Collective at 123 Main Street is where people can go if they want to help with Food Not Bombs. Thanks for calling in, Greg.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Aloha.
And the same to you. 427-3772 is the phone number if you want to call Free Radio and comment on what you've heard or perhaps what you didn't hear and wished you had heard. I'm always Monday morning quarterbacking, and I'm really glad that you did go down there, Bob, and get this useless series of admissions, or should I say old, tired stories from Emily Riley, because I think the more pressure put on Riley, the better. One of the problems I find I have is that I tend to talk more than I should and not let the other person convict herself, so to speak. We have a caller again, so let the caller talk. You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Bernard.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you what I think. There's an organized pressure here. There's three different things that I found that I think we could really put concrete pressure on them. One is obviously, you know, what the city's position is, or the attorney's position on the sleeping ban on Jones' decision. The second one would be to look at, you know, try to get all the records that Emily supposedly had in this first 6 months that she was in office. You know, what campsites, what kind of comments there were, what their feedback was, who these people were. I think we might be able to go after her big time on that. And then finally, the one that I think is, you know, really, you know, making sure the council get downs on Ranger for, you know, giving people tickets for blankets, you know, after the, during the constitutional time they were allowed to have it. So those are three things that I, can think of. So I just want to put that out.
Tell me that second thing again, Bernard. I mean, the third thing again, the last thing you mentioned.
Well, Ranger, Councilman Ranger, Warrer.
Wait a minute, you're talking about Wallace?
Yes.
What about him?
Well, giving out tickets for blankets.
What about that? Yeah, he's
hours.
Done that. So what now, once we have that?
Put pressure on the council to notify him to stop that.
Yeah, right. Even
under existing law, they're fucking up.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of those three suggestions, and as I mentioned earlier in the show, there have been various real attempts to find, areas where homeless people could sleep, or at least they were...
Well, we ought to see what Emily was up to.
They were. I don't know if she was up to anything, frankly.
Well, that's what we got to demand.
But that was 6 years ago, Bernard. That was 6 years ago. And,
So
obviously she wasn't interested enough 6 years ago to do shit about it when the council actually had a majority that would end the sleeping ban, or at least discuss ending the sleeping ban.
Well...
She made no efforts publicly to do anything at that time.
I still want to see what she did.
Sure. I mean, sure. Request her records. That's fine.
Okay.
But, I mean, it sort of smacks to me of going, door to door to each church and asking them to let in a homeless person or something. But, I'd say the more records you get, I'm a big man for records.
Just the more pressure that we can build against these people, until it breaks.
You think we should contact Al-Qaeda or possibly the Sunnis and Shias to come in? And,
I'm not advocating
not
that
kind
Robert.
Of pressure. Certainly
in
not.
In fact, those two are just as much as my enemies.
Well, they're fighting for independence in their own country.
Right, but, I don't think much
of
have
a little independence in Santa Cruz, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, call in if you'd like to deal with us on this show, 427-3772. And Bernard is quite right. It's important to put pressure on the city council and get records and so forth. You got to be quick on your feet, I think, to deal with these politicians and get them to make statements that have some resonance in the community and really reveal what's going on. They have a steady supply of pap and bullshit ready to hand out, and that's what, homilies and truisms. Gosh, we wish we could help. It's a national problem. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I had a comment about Emily.
Who is this caller?
Oh, this is Valerie.
Hey, Valerie.
Hey. I was feeling like it reminds me of the times, although I was very young, and I guess I've seen recordings of it, the times when people started pressuring people about how we look at black people and, started to get in people's face about discrimination and how we treat them. And it sounded like people who were sympathetic about the idea but weren't willing to take a stand and say it's wrong, they just go, oh, yeah, it's terrible the way we treat the black people. It's just, we can't be the ones who say no to that, And so it's like those kind of people are the ones, because they're in power, have to be, as Bernard was saying, put pressure on them because, they need to be aware of it, but... the ones that are willing to stand out, where are they? Where are the people who are willing to say, I'm sick of it, and I want to say no? Do we have only patty asses sitting around there going, oh, it's so bad, but I don't like it, and I'm sick of it? What happened to those kind of people? Are all these people just kissing up to the rich people? It's really sad.
Are you talking about council members? Or are you talking? Oh, yeah, yes. In a word, the council members are concerned, particularly the ones that we have in power right now, with conservative constituencies or and they're concerned with higher office. Emily Riley and Ryan Coonerty are actually reportedly thinking of running for, I don't know, the state legislature. I think Assemblyman Laird's seat when it comes vacant.
The hell are the ones with the guts to stand up and say this is bullshit, like back in the days when black people were discriminated against?
There weren't
it's
such,
just ridiculous.
Well, those people didn't run for city council. They were on the streets mobilizing and organizing. They didn't, running for city council is a sort of more of a, it's more of a sort of a career move.
Well, there were political people who did finally say it, but I guess some of those, if we look back in the 60s, some of them were shot for it.
Well, Martin Luther King never ran for political office.
Bobby
Malcolm
Kennedy, he was against it.
Well, Bobby Kennedy was also, you know, Joe McCarthy's right-hand man, and he was big in, you know. He picked up on something that other people were doing and ran with it later, very, very late in his career.
So that's the way it is with politicians. There isn't anybody who's going to do any activism, and nobody's going to vote them in.
I think it's up to us, Valerie.
It's really sad, but I suppose it's the way it should be. It's like a war, but how can we do this in a way that's peaceful? One way, I guess, is pressuring, thank goodness for our laws, our Constitution and Bill of Rights, to pressure them with that. At least we have something to lean on.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I know you work every Tuesday. You put out literature against the sleeping ban, and you distribute food in front of New Leaf Market. I guess Gregory just called in. They sing and play on Wednesday night. You play on Tuesday night. Tim Rumford does this on Monday night. So there's a growing series of at least street voices out there who are concerned with this.
We're taking the space, but now Tim is even suggesting doing it all the time, which is something we eventually should do, and I know you guys might be bringing that up tonight. But I guess the whole idea is to take a stand.
To do something. To do what all the
nothing.
Time?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, to do what all the time?
Do it. You guys were talking, and you haven't really brought that up yet, but I know the idea, there's a seed thought about the idea of doing taking a stand. I do it for a couple of hours. The other people do, too. But the idea of taking a stand and speaking out to the public and making some kind of a voice about this and getting people aware of it.
Right. Well, we've talked about and actually done, you know, covered past sleeping bans. We, of course, had a protest on the 22nd of December. We were in front of the city attorney's office and the vice mayor's office, and we'd like to go back.
Even Food Not Bombs used to say that they wanted to feed in public so that people could see that there's people out there that are hungry.
Yep.
So the idea of being out there and feeding people like that and showing people that there's a lot out there that need help, it's really an important thing to bring it out to the public and make it a conscious thing. But I don't know what else to do other than that.
Well, keep doing what you're doing and keep listening and keep talking on the air. I'm gonna move on to the next person.
Yeah.
We got a couple of people who've invaded the studio who want to say a word or two, and they aren't the FCC.
All right.
Thank
Great
you.
Great tape, Bob and Bernard. Good for you guys.
All right. Well, thank you,
caller. Bye.
Yeah, in the studio with us is who? What is your name,
sir? I'll be Dark Man.
You are Dark Man, and you brought a couple of other Dark Men with you. Who are they?
Yes,
my name is the Philosopher King.
Philosopher King, and then on the other side we have...
The Indigenous Preacher.
The Indigenous Preacher, or IP, as I call him. So, Dark Man, what light have you brought to shed on these issues?
Well, I would like to let people know out there in the world that are do not quite have a house over their head... That myself, too, I was going about 4 or 5 years camping, cars, outside, friends' couches, couch surfing. And I just landed myself a really beautiful place right now that I'm so excited about. And I'm noticing that I'm able to do so many more things in my world, be able to pull the world together. And it's just really fantastic to be able to have my own place. And being homeless for so long, it's just, you know, it's just nothing that big. But then when you finally get your own place, it's like being welcome into it, and your stuff's there at the same place the next day.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, there's some of us have been talking. We had a Huff meeting about this yesterday. Huff meets every Wednesday at 9:30 in the basement of the county building at the American Cafe, in case you want to come, folks. That's a homeless civil rights group, 9:30 in the morning, 701 Ocean Street. We were discussing a downtown sleepout where people would be, in fact, sleeping illegally, camping even, and suggesting to the police, well, if you want to arrest us, show us where there's a shelter to go to. Now, would people who have gone through homelessness and come up from homelessness, would you be likely to join this, or would you be willing to say, fuck no, I got off the streets, good luck, guys, go find your own house?
Right. Basically, you know, if I'm sitting there walking down the street, I see someone that is not able to feed themselves, they're shivering, they're cold. You know, I feel that, I see that, and I can't turn my back to someone, and I mean, I've had plenty of people turn their back to me, but I've also had plenty of people help me too along the way. And going out there and coming together as people and going out there in the freezing cold.
You're willing to risk arrest by to join a sleeper. Let's get down to the nitty gritty and risk warm, comfortable house.
Let's risk arrest for a sleep out, and also let's protest the war. Let's freaking just let them know that the police state is not going to be ruling our lives any longer.
Officer, that's the one you want to take right over there, the guy with the earphones on. Now we have, and identify yourself, sir. You are?
Once again, I have been known as the Philosopher King.
PK, Philosopher King. Go ahead.
I had an interesting question. After hearing that testament of a previously homeless person or a previous without shelter on a consistent basis person, then transitioning into the point of life where they have a roof over their heads and they have stable surroundings, that right there is kind of indicative of a larger picture in my mind. What are the efforts going on right now to solve this problem? Because obviously there is a problem of homelessness and lack of shelter for people in Santa Cruz in specific and across the United States. But as I'm sure you're aware and many other people are aware, this is a systemic problem. This is something that filters down from the very top, you know, where we're willing to allot our money and our funds and our political power.
We're not working on solving the whole problem here. We're working on one part of it, which is don't arrest them while they're struggling to survive outside. That's the part
of
the problem.
And that's integral. That's a necessary part. That shows
that's really the issue we're working
that's
on.
That's the grassroots level.
You know, and what you hear Emily Riley, the mayor, talking about, you probably weren't in the studio when this was happening. She was saying, oh, it's a national problem. You know, it comes from all kinds. What you're saying, I mean, it's certainly true, but the question is, are the local police fucking over homeless people in the meantime while this national situation is going on? I'm not saying the police have a big hard-on to do that, although some of them do. John Wallace, for one, unfortunately. He's the park and rec ranger. But the issue is, how do we change the situation locally, even if Bush continues his war, even if he bombs Iran, even if he, you know, lets the Turks move in and invade the Kurdistan, even, as many things, horrible things may come to happen, what are we going to do here? Now, one thing that was suggested at the Huff meeting was that we have a joint vigil, and perhaps a couple of joints as well, against two wars, the war on the poor and the war against the homeless, maybe setting it up at Tent University on campus, where they had set that up a couple years ago, and having a 24-hour situation where people come in, sleep outside in solidarity, both with the homeless and in a demand that not just there be a resolution to turn back the war in Iraq, but that they revoke the entire resolution that came, which actually no one's talked about, the resolution in 2001 that authorized all this use of force in Afghanistan, in Iraq, as well as numerous measures like, not the Patriot Act, but other measures.
I'd like to take this time to compliment you for pointing out the difference between the poor and the homeless, because there is a large difference. If you've looked at some of the sociological surveys and statistics out there that are specifically referencing the poor, they always look at quality of life, how much you can spend on food, health insurance, whether you have a job, transportation, other things like that. And that right there points to a few stepping stones in someone's life that allows them to reach out to the resources in their community that at least let them flounder or be stable, you know, one of those two normally. But homelessness is a problem all of its own, and oftentimes
there's
connotations to insanity, the criminal element, the extreme impoverished, and these are all true.
Have you been homeless yourself?
For a short amount of period of time.
And would you be likely, since you're not homeless now, to join protest movements and actually risk, let's say, arrest? Or
absolutely.
Really?
I as an individual in Santa Cruz,
I'm
willing to risk arrest at virtually any point in time for the greater civil good.
Okay. What about you out there in the radio land? You want to risk arrest on behalf of homeless people? Give me a call, 427-3772. Let me know what you think. And I think we have a third man in the studio. Do you want to say anything, sir, or are you just going to be the strong, silent type? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is the indigenous preacher again.
Okay.
I do benefit shows for animal shelters. I have a website, musiciansforanimals.com. That's F-O-R, musiciansforanimals.com. I was homeless once here myself, and it's really surprising when you have someone come up to you that works for the law and just tells you to keep going and doesn't really suggest, you know, what you should do or give you some positive encouragement. I think the whole vibe of the police officers change. you know, have a heart. Like Bonnie Raitt says, have a heart. Definitely should have more of a heart and read the gospel and, you know, just have some compassion, you know. It's hard, you know, if there's not a place to go for these people, you know, to get a cup of coffee and, you know, just because a lot of people are sitting out there and bothering tourists, so to say, bothering, you know. But, you know, if they have to do that to get a cup of coffee or a Danish or a croissant or something, you know, that's something I think could be helped out a little bit more and more online access and positive reinforcement and encouragement.
So, Indigenous Preacher, that's your name? We're talking about Indigenous Preacher, is that right?
Yes, that is my government name.
We'll call you that then. Would you be willing to do a little music making if this event came to pass? Would you be around? Are you going to be? Are you moving on? What's your situation?
No, I'm in town for a little while. I'll be totally all about it.
Well, good. Maybe we can get Bob here, who's part of our brain trust, to get you know your contact point, your aliases, your mother's maiden name, bank account numbers, and so forth. In order to, shall we say, contact you in the event that we begin this seditious attempt to, dare I say it, restore human rights in Santa Cruz? Bob?
Well, I'm really glad to hear there are people willing to get involved with demonstrations and risk arrest. Because coming down the pike, and we've been talking to some attorneys locally, statewide, and even from Washington, D.C., as we move towards a possible lawsuit on the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz, we will need to, and as an ex-military man, you ratchet up your attacks during the time you have negotiations. So we're looking to go to the streets in a big way, camp out, demonstration, music, parades, whatever we can think of, to ratchet up the attacks during the time of the lawsuit. So anybody
wild
else,
and crazy love-ins?
Anybody at wild and crazy love-ins, anything we can do to ratchet it up. We need to bring high visibility to begin with, and then the hard work comes after that, taking it to the community, paper by paper, phone call by phone call. So I'm glad to hear these gentlemen and excited about it, and I'd like to hear more from the community, that's your listeners. What can we do in these demonstrations to make it a big thing?
427-3772 is the call-in number. Give us a call here at Free Radio. Darkman.
Yes, sir. All right, here, I have something I got some emotions on that I'd like to get out to the people out there. Basically, there's no jobs here in Santa Cruz. We rely everything on tourism. Okay, and if there were jobs, nothing about UC Santa Cruz. I love it up there. But they took all the jobs, but they have families helping them get through to survive, whereas there's people that are living on the streets, people living in this area, trying to get jobs here and there, but there's nowhere to go. So where are the jobs? San Jose, San Francisco. All right, let's go there. Well, I've been doing that, but you know, I have to break the law every time I put the key in the ignition, because I just need to get to work, to go work, to do my stuff, to come back here. I'm not some dangerous person, but I can't afford $1,500 each ticket for a suspended license. I remember once I was pulled over for a suspended license like 3 years ago. I called in to this man right here from the jail cell. I was like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to transport myself. Where's the right to transport? I understand things with insurance or accidents or dangerous stuff like this. I mean, the system's got to work itself out to understand that we are, I don't know, going towards depression. The economy's messed up. There isn't money here in this county. I mean, and how are people going to pay for all these fines? How are they going to pay for their rent? How are they going to pay for their food? I mean, these things need to be addressed. I don't have the answer.
Well, they don't care. It's a creeping criminalization process that's going on. You either have the money to pay or you don't play. And if you can't pay, you get the fuck out of town, I think is what they're saying. Unfortunately, that's true. The towns all over the country, and they're all saying the same thing because they're not controlled by people. They're controlled by elites. That's
right.
The problem.
And they make all the decisions, what you buy, where you live. And so they don't even think about the lower class. But the thing is, we're human. We're just trying to survive, exist, go on to make kids and die, you know. Let our other kids do stuff, but we don't want them living through poverty, barely getting through, having emotional problems.
There are good jobs in Iraq. Now, as military contractors, they can make a good wage defending
right.
those Iraqi...
Owns what, 80%
so what's
of all
your
the
beef, mister?
There?
I believe...
machine gun them.
It's not indigenous preacher, it's...
the philosopher king.
The philosopher king, sorry.
I think what you guys just talked about was very important. The duality of Santa Cruz is constantly in question for me. I think that there is an elitist group, an elitist society that lives here that's very intelligent, very competent, very liberal, very active, very conscious. But then there is also the middle class who lives in Santa Cruz. And I really hate to mention it because I've lived here all my life. I'm a Santa Cruz into the heart, but we are a racist, dualist society. We do not have the demographics of, say, Stockton. We don't have the demographics of Los Angeles or San Diego, these much larger cities, but we don't have the demographics of many other smaller cities around the country who are racially integrated, who are as politically integrated. We are not reaching those levels. We are extremely liberal. We're extremely active in that liberalism.
Two things.
But we're not acting on it.
First of all, we're not liberal. We give the pretense of liberalism.
Right.
You know, you have, how can you be liberal to criminalize people at night who have no place to sleep? I mean,
sure.
You know, I mean, that's not liberal. I mean, Los Angeles is more liberal. San Diego is now more liberal. They have said, well, now we're not going to arrest homeless people, admittedly, under pressure from the courts. Richmond is more liberal. The other thing is, in these cities, you have large pressure groups who are, you know, you have large numbers of black and Latino people who are realizing that, at least to some extent, that they've got to get together and defend their own rights. In this community, you have the pretense of liberalism. People like Emily Riley, the baker on, you know, who's you might want to wander into the bakery shop where Emily Riley does her baking up at Mission and Laurel Street.
Oh, yes.
And
oh,
tell
yes.
her, you know, ask her, where are the homeless people going to sleep, Ms. Riley? You know, nice sentiments on the air, but what the fuck are they going to do?
Yeah, that's real important. And I look around and I think when I'm addressing that dualistic aspect of Santa Cruz, what I'm really getting at is there is a lot of money and there's a lot of wealth. And I'm not far off when I say that California is probably within the top 3 or 4 or 5 states out of 50 for quality of life. We have a very high quality of life, and it's because our taxes are up there. We have a good amount of taxes that support the base element of quality of life. The street cleanings, the roads, the wonderful palm trees, the scenery, the beaches, the this and that. You notice some cracks in the armor and seams in the armor, but what I'm really getting at is the lack of funding for some of those programs and some of these institutions that can really drive the
really
liberal element that we cling to.
We aren't even talking about lack of funding in this particular program. We're just saying stop arresting people who are trying to shelter themselves.
Right.
Now, it's true. You know, it would be nice to have some funding. It would be nice to have some transitional housing. Nice to have some employment. Some permanent housing would be great.
You know what I'd like? You know, I would like people not to die in Santa Cruz. I'd like people not to die out there
in the
cold.
And the way that would work is if people could shelter themselves without being afraid the police are going to
bust
them.
People are dying right now, people.
Right.
You
there
need
were
to
45
be aware
people
of this.
This year who died
these
outside.
These temperatures are killers.
45? Yes, 45. Now, that didn't all die of freezing. That's the homeless death toll for this year. However, you know, some of them did. Now, the issue here is how do we change that? And the answer is the politicians will not change it. And making speeches on the radio isn't going to change it either. What's going to change it is if we actually get together and do something. So
you
guys,
I support you.
Then leave me your emails and phone numbers so we can try to hook you up when actually we do something.
That's what I need. And just so people know, 42 people died, 34 of them were male, 8 of them were female. This is a travesty in Santa Cruz. We don't need this. With our activism across boundaries, across national boundaries, political boundaries, gender boundaries, racial boundaries, we need to look at the local level. You need to think globally and act locally, people, just as we always claim. And this kind of death toll in Santa Cruz is not all right. We need
stand up.
Thank you, Philosopher King. Thank you, Dark Man.
Free
and thank
the music.
You, Indigenous philosopher. No, Indigenous preacher, that's it. Sorry, IP. Still in the studio with us is Bob Patton and these three gentlemen. If you have any questions for them or comments, you can certainly call in. 427-3772, actually, is the phone number here. I'm going to roll with a little bit of music, and we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Rise up, rise up, rise up. They say it's to protect you, while they try to dispossess you of the right to decide between wrong or right, to openly discuss what politicians hide. They want to keep their secret plans from the public eye. We gotta keep our fire burning, keep our spirits bright. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. Money got no children, and bombs ain't for building. Killing ain't no way to make a peaceful day, as all of God's children can easily explain. We gotta keep our fire burning, keep our spirits bright. Stand up and speak for what we know is right. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. I see days ahead. Kiss my children into bed. All across the planet I see that everything is fine. Yeah. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. We got the power and the will, and we'll do it for our children. For the warmongers and the corporate whores in the history books with the dinosaurs. I claim my power, I claim my rights. No dirty tricks are gonna change my mind. I'm gonna rise up, rise up, rise up. I'm gonna rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. 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 Rise up.
Oh, my soul. And the Pacific Trading Company, talking to a man on a bench with a spiffy-looking bedroll and traveling sack. Your name, sir?
Charles Joseph Stock.
You are, in fact, a musician.
That's what I've been told.
But I see no guitar.
It's impounded.
How did that happen?
They put me into the county jail, the sheriff's department, and then they took my other stuff all the way over there.
You're pointing at the police station toward
yeah.
Laurel and Center Street?
West Street. And it's like I've had pneumonia for the last 6 or 7 days.
You don't look too well.
And I've not been able to go get my stuff. Yeah. That's like really weird.
Now, you were telling me that you were sleeping outside a cutlery shop down the row here on Pacific Avenue?
In the back alley, yeah. Over by the paid parking garage.
Kind of near Asian Rose area? Or?
No. It's like the you know where the paid parking garage is?
Yeah.
It's that alley. And I was sleeping in
the door. The one you usually play in?
Hmm?
The one you usually play in?
No.
The other parking garage.
Yeah, the other one. And there was no explanation. I was just put in cuffs and taken to jail, and I sat there for 8 hours.
And you say Officer Seeley did this?
Yes.
Did he tell you he was arresting you on a warrant?
Nope.
Were you intoxicated at the time?
No, I was not.
Did he say he was arresting you for sleeping or camping?
Didn't say a thing.
And you said that you think that the person involved with this was a merchant, a woman who was nearby with her arms folded?
Yeah, I believe so.
About what time did this occur?
About 9 in the morning.
And did you ask Officer Seeley what he was doing?
Yes.
What is his response?
None.
And you, of course, you say this is the first time you've actually been handcuffed and taken to jail in Santa Cruz.
The first time I've ever been taken in handcuffs and taken to jail.
And when you were released, were you given a court date or any kind of charge?
They didn't charge me or nothing.
Did they say anything when they were releasing you?
Nope.
And this happened on what date?
This was last Thursday morning.
Today is Sunday, and we're talking week ago Thursday. So last Thursday, let's see, last Sunday was the 31st, so it would be the 30th, the 29th, that must be the 28th we're talking about?
Kind of, sort of. I'd have to look at the paperwork. I don't feel like digging through it.
I gotcha. Have you been approached by police officers since then?
Mr. Seeley has seemed to appear wherever I'm at.
But he hasn't attempted to arrest and handcuff you again?
No.
And how many times has he showed up?
Probably twice.
And what were the circumstances?
Just waiting for me to walk down the street, I guess.
Did he talk to you or just
stand
there?
No, he just stood there. He hasn't harassed me. I can out loud say that he hasn't harassed me.
Now, your means of survival and support involve, in part, your instrument, your guitar, right?
And it's over in the other police station, the Santa Cruz police station. And I've been so sick that I cannot get there. It's too far to walk. And I can't carry it. I'm weak and I'm sick. I have pneumonia.
And in fact, are you sleeping pretty much in the same general area behind buildings downtown when you sleep at night the last few nights?
Different places.
So, any words for the folks out there in Radio Land about what's happening, about what they should know about the situation?
Don't sleep on the river.
Because?
They're sweeping it. Hey, Beth. They're sweeping it. This is what I've been told. I've not been down there, so I don't know. But they're sweeping the river.
Thank you, CJ. Do you think you're going to be playing guitar again anytime soon in the parking garage?
I'll get my guitar back tomorrow morning. Actually, tomorrow afternoon. I have somebody who's going to pick me up and drive me over there, and I'm going to proffer my paperwork and do that.
Well, I'll be expecting to hear those tones coming out of that instrument.
You bet, brother.
Thank you, CJ.
And that was a street interview. Here's a caller. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Daniel. Remember me? I called you this early this morning
at
Parker House.
Yeah, Daniel, you've been listening in, or?
Well, I remembered. I was working on the VCR, and I remembered that I had an appointment with you to speak to you on the air. And I just got to call another number of yours, and I found out you operate Huff.
Right, we're all members of Huff, pretty much. Yeah, and you're welcome to come to a meeting. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship.
Am I on the air now?
Freedom. Yes, you are. We both are, actually.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you have that going.
Yes, certainly.
And I've been listening to you on the radio for such a long time, and I want to thank you for supporting the homeless and helping the people who are with the problems with this, with what's going on today. And I thank you for helping the people with their problems of all this, with the problems, you know, and having you, doing your support to help the people who need your support and the problems in the community. And can I tell you what happened to me a long time ago?
Well, Daniel, have you been homeless yourself?
Oh, yes, I was.
Now, is this what you're telling me about what happened then, or what are you thinking of talking about?
Oh, this is when, let's see, I was homeless let's see, what year was it? I think it was 1981 or 87.
So you've actually been pretty much housed since then?
Yes, I was living in a boarding care home before that.
But now you're in a boarding care home again?
Yes, I'm in a boarding care home now.
How are they treating you?
Before then, I was arrested, and then after I finished high school, I was arrested.
What were you arrested for?
For being homeless. I'm not sure.
This was in Santa Cruz or somewhere else?
Yes, it's in Santa Cruz. It was in Santa Cruz. And then I got put in Harbor Hills for 20 years or something like that. And then I got released. And after that, to a court judge after Jane got me out of there.
Jane Kaiser of PERC?
Yeah, Jane Kaiser of PERC.
For those who don't know, PERC is Patients Inmates Rights Collective.
Yeah, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. She helped me get me out of there, and now...
Psychiatric Inmates Rights,
yeah.
Yeah,
now Peggy and Ann Butler took it over. Her sister, Ann Butler, is the president of Front Street Incorporated, and she's... And Ann's her...
Sorry, Daniel. Took over what?
It took over Harbor Hills, and
right, Harbor
now
Hills
changed it to a nicer place.
Harbor Hills, for those who don't know, is a sort of a board and care place on...
No, it's not a boarding home. It's a locked facility.
A locked facility, quite,
yeah.
Quite right. On
That's
on,
where they the force
it's
the
on
force
seventh,
drugging
it's
there. They make you take drugs and
right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, that's and has that been your experience?
Yes, I was there for about 20 years, 20 to 30 or 40 years.
What kind of drugs do they make you take?
Oh, I took all kinds of drugs. I don't know what kind of drugs they were, but there was some of the drugs were bad that time before.
Are you still taking drugs?
Huh?
Are you still taking psychiatric medication?
Yeah, it was bad drugs before Ann Butler took it over.
Are you taking psychiatric medication?
No, I'm taking the proper medications for my mental illness and the proper medications for my heart.
Daniel, are those psychiatric medications? I mean, are they like, you know, lithium or?
No. These are the proper type of medications. Since Peggy and Ann took it over, Prince Street Incorporated, they give us the proper drugs. A long time ago, it was bad drugs.
So when did Peggy and Barbara take over Harbor Hills?
They took it over, I think, in the year, I don't know, somewhere in the year 2000 or something.
And
2000
how long,
something.
And when did you get released from Harbor Hills?
Well, what happened was I went AWOL 3 times from Harbor Hills.
You escaped?
Huh?
You escaped.
Yes, I went AWOL from Harbor Hills a long time ago. Well,
right.
Before Ann and Butler, Peggy and Ann took it over.
Uh-huh.
And, the third time they put me in the Napa State Hospital, and they punctured my eardrum before they released me, and I went back to Harbor Hills, and then I got released by court order.
Now, did you yourself initiate the release, or did somebody else do it? I mean, did you say, I want out, take me to court, or did just somebody come to your room one day and say, hey, you're free?
Jane got me out.
Jane, and did you ask her to get you out?
Yeah, I told her she was concerned about it. She'd seen me there, so she got me out. This was before Peggy and Ann took it over.
And how are you doing? Where are you living now?
I'm living at Front Street, and it's a good place. It's clean, and I'm receiving the proper medications for my mental illness. They do, Peggy and Ann Butler, a Front Street Incorporated, do a good job.
And they run Front Street?
Yeah.
And
it's clean, and they give me the proper medications. Before they took over, it was really, really bad. It's like traffic drugs.
So they took over Front Street, not Harbor Hills.
No, they took over Harbor Hills too.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they're running a number of places.
Yeah, and these places it's real good now because and the drugs are safe now because before that it was forced drugging and before they took over it was forced drugging and it was really really bad and everything psychotropic drugs and everything.
Now, what about now? I mean, at Front Street and Harbor Hills, is it still forced drugging or not?
No. It's this time it's proper medications and the places are good now. But before that, it was forced drugging, it was shots, and it was really, 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 really bad before they took over.
Well, that sounds good. I mean, I'm surprised to hear that because I'm not aware that forced drugging has stopped in Santa Cruz County, but maybe it has.
Well, in some places there is forced drugging. Places that pay an end are owned. Like long time ago in the 80s, you know, it was forced drugging and kidnapping and stuff like that. A lot of bad things was going on in most places that pay an end wasn't owning.
So, do you have friends who are still in locked wards who are still facing forced drugging?
Oh, yeah, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Now, in Santa Cruz County or elsewhere?
Probably elsewhere, like somewhere in other cities or other states or something like that.
So you don't know of anybody? I mean, do you maintain contacts with people in Dominican? I mean, are you? I know Jane Kaiser of PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, which works to stop forced drugging and establish contact with folks like yourself who are trapped in these places, sends in people and needs volunteers. And for those who are interested in volunteering for PERC, give Jane Kaiser a call.
Yes, she has people visit them talk to them and see how they're doing and stuff like that.
Daniel, what is her number? 475. Do you know her? Do you know Jane's number offhand?
475-7904.
Right, that's it. 475-7904 for those who want to get involved with PERC, which has to do with stopping forced drugging. And there's some dangers of them expanding forced drugging because now there's a lot more money going into the mental health industry, as they call it, because of Proposition 65 that passed a couple years ago. Daniel, I've got to roll on you pretty quickly. You want to kind of conclude?
Yeah, did you tell the listening audience what I told you about the E. coli problem?
I haven't talked about any of that because we really didn't get into it. You're talking about contamination in the water? Or?
Well, no, E. coli comes. E. coli is in the food, I think. What my theory is that E. coli is sort of like it is a parasite, and it likes dirty, untidy overgrowth of spinach or something like that. Untidy overgrowth,
well,
like dirt that overgrows, that's untidy.
Yeah.
My remedy is a tidy shrinkage, which means if it's untidy, tidiness would remedy the untidiness, and the shrinkage would remedy the overgrowth.
Well,
the key to
dealing with E. coli in the past for most people has been you've got to clean your hands after you use toilet facilities.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to that's why they insist restaurant workers wash their hands frequently because it's true that crapping and shitting and pissing, these are normal human functions, but you've got to be careful when you do
it. Naturally, in our intestinal tract, it brings death to infants and the elderly.
Right.
I say overcooked bacon ought to do it.
Well, this really isn't the subject of this show,
but I
do appreciate your talking about these other issues, which is the subject of this show, how people
sometimes
are treated.
Sometimes I wish I could do something about this forced drugging. It's really, 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 really bad I've seen it before,
keep talking with Jane Kaiser
about it. The shock treatment unit she told me about and stuff like that.
Well,
she wants to stop
Daniel,
forced
keep,
drugging.
Keep,
she she told me everything about
Daniel,
what she
has. Daniel,
I
got to go, Daniel. But you keep, if you want to get involved with PERC, I suggest that's one place to do it. And let me know if you've come up with any new kinds of accounts of things that have been happening in the city and county around forced drugging, or some more positive things that you've found that you've talked about tonight. Thanks for calling in. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. You can give a call, and thank you, Daniel, for calling. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norse. This name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I've got my bathrobe. I'm ready to do a sleep out. Why is that? Do I want to sleep outside in the cold because I like to be photographed wearing my bathrobe? No, it's because homeless people are forced every night to face criminalization for engaging in the normal human function of sleeping and keeping warm in our progressive Santa Cruz City with our progressive mayor, Emily Riley. We heard earlier this Emily Riley giving a series of responses to human rights organization members, Bob Patton and Bernard Klitzer, and I read this other, if you go to indybay.org, that's a website, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, and you can Google for Emily Riley, you'll find I wrote an open letter to her, which she never responded to. And I wrote her this letter. I'm going to read it aloud again because I think it's pertinent. And I also left her, of course, a couple of phone messages that she never responded to either. Emily, per my phone message to you this evening, your written commitment to the Green Party, when she ran, the Green Party was a force in Santa Cruz. When she ran for city council in 2000, there was an actual operational Green Party in the city. They actually elected one member of the city council, Tim Fitzmaurice, who proved to be about as green as bacon. That is to say, not green at all on homeless issues. Emily Riley, I don't know if she was a member of the Green Party, but she sought the Green Party endorsement. And in so doing, she had to answer the following question. Would you, if elected, move to remove the sleeping and blanket section of the city's camping ordinance, wherein sleeping or covering up with a blanket are in and of themselves crimes? Emily wrote the following. I hate the wording of that ordinance. When I read it, I want to wrap myself in a blanket and march them all. But as a council member, I would not do that. The council has to work together on this issue. Yes, I would urge the council to change that wording. However, I cannot promise I would march into council chambers upon election and make a motion to remove those clauses that night. I am a fan of David Silva, an activist who was fighting this for years, and respect his vision. Working recently with David and others to establish safe sleeping zones in the city, I was shown in no uncertain terms that if we are going to change any aspect of the camping ban, in even a small and seemingly innocuous way, we must prepare. So apparently she's been preparing for the last 6 years, but doesn't seem to be preparing to do anything. Continuing with what she wrote, we need to plan so that we are not just responding to rhetoric with rhetoric. I hope we have a council dedicated to improving the lives of homeless people and not just making it okay for them to sleep outside, as if that solves the problem. I want to focus on solutions for our local homeless citizens, providing education, job training, and building a family shelter. Here again is what people who don't want to address, politicians who don't want to address the sleeping ban always do. They say, we want more than just letting homeless people sleep outside. They need more. But, of course, they also need the right, while these grandiose visions are being pursued, to be able to sleep while that's happening. And that's something Emily Riley refuses to let them do. I want to focus on solutions for our local homeless citizens. We didn't arrive at this crisis overnight, and we aren't going to solve it overnight. Again, talking about solving a crisis rather than solving a very particular aspect of something, which is the city's criminalizing sleeping, per se. We need elected officials who will commit to the long haul, who will continue to fund homeless services, look for ways to expand them, and help the people who are on the street now to fund shelter without punishing them for being without it. My concern for this issue is also why I support Measure U on the November 2000 ballot, which will provide additional funds for homeless services. So she said, well, my letter continued, have you ever urged the council to change that wording? Because that's some of what she said in her response to the Green Party question. She said, I'm trying to find it in here. Maybe she didn't say that. I'm pretty sure she did. Let's see. Yes, I would urge the council to change the wording of the sleeping and the blanket bans. However, of course, she's never done that. You're also aware, perhaps, of the L.A. Jones decision I wrote her, finding sleep deprivation ordinances cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment. That 2-1 decision, though on appeal, supports the ACLU lawsuit in Los Angeles enjoining the LAPD from enforcing the sleeping ban in Skid Row during nighttime hours. The city attorneys of Los Angeles and San Diego are so worried that the Supreme Court will uphold the lower court that they've instructed the police to stop enforcing the sleeping ban at night. In L.A., this is limited to Skid Row. During the oral communications, I have requested that our city attorney show himself at least the progressive equal of his L.A. and San Diego colleagues. Let Santa Cruz do the same. I'll stop reading this. I'm just, you know, there's no need to show that Emily Riley is either a hypocrite or has changed her position markedly. The fact that she doesn't respond to my letters and my phone calls, even briefly, shows that she doesn't really have a lot of respect for me or for my opinion, doesn't feel it's worth responding, or perhaps she just feels she can't respond. It's not too clear what the situation is there. I think, however, that I will publicly ask her again. I'm going to try to do this on the phone so that we can actually hear this and we can hear my request. I'm getting a strange Let's see what we can do here. Here we go.
Please hold.
And we're trying to get the Emily Riley line at City Hall, and you can do that yourself again at
420-5020. Emily, if you'd like to meet with me as mayor, please call 420-5020 to set up an appointment. Otherwise, leave your name and number when you hear the beep, but please leave your number even if you think I have it. Thanks so much. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hi, Emily. This is Robert Norris calling you on Thursday evening. I'm actually calling you on the air after having heard the interview you granted to the Human Rights Organization activists Bob and Bernard. Thank you for doing that, by the way. However, I did write you a letter and gave you several phone messages in November requesting information from you about how your position has changed from the statement you gave the Green Party that year regarding your promise, quote, to urge the council to change the wording of the sleeping in blanket bans. I'd like a kind of a call back or possibly an email back from you on that, on what the situation is with that now. Have you changed in the last 6 years on that issue? And then secondly, you stated in this interview with Bob and Bernard that you needed to get permission from the entire council to share the city's legal position on the Jones issue, why it feels that it, unlike Los Angeles, San Diego, and Richmond, have the right to deny homeless people the right to sleep at night, whereas they don't. That is, our law is constitutional, whereas theirs, that practice there would not be. I would like to know, are you committing yourself to putting this on the next agenda in the closed session of City Council so you can get a vote from the City Council so at least the public can know what we're going to have to pay for if and when a lawsuit happens around this issue? In other words, will you be putting this on the next agenda of the City Council, at least to get an advisory opinion that can be released to the general community, as you said you would be trying to do in somewhat vaguer terms to Bob and to Bernard? My number is 423-4833. You can also email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com. Thanks for your time. And you, too, can talk with the mayor, or at least into the mayor's voicemail, by calling 420-5020, pushing 2, and then pushing 2 again. You got to wait a little bit after each punch of the dial. So, we haven't got much time left here. One thing that, as I said, is encouraging, there are a number of things that are encouraging. One is that there is a kind of a, well, more and more people individually and some activists who have really had some success in organizing, like Tenderfoot Tim, who you've heard on the show before, does the Monday night meal in front of the New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue, wants to hold a direct action, wants to do a sleep out, wants to put the city on essentially have them come on the record and say, well, we are going to arrest you even though we have no shelter. And when they start doing that, then there will be the basis immediately for the need for a federal court to come in and say stop. And that is something that we're going to be talking about doing. If you want to volunteer to be a part of this effort, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call. That's the HUFF line. And you can volunteer all kinds of services. You don't have to volunteer to be arrested. You can volunteer to make flyers. You can volunteer to work on the computer. You can volunteer to write letters. You can volunteer to call your friends. You can be a part of all this without coming to a single meeting. But we're looking to see how broadly people are interested in doing this. The reason why it's important now is because there is this federal court decision, which is law. And the law is you don't arrest a homeless person unless you have a place to send them, simply for sleeping at night. Now, what Vice Mayor Coonerty and Mayor Riley are claiming, although it wasn't too clear from that conversation with Riley, is that since Santa Cruz allows people to sleep during the day, that that's somehow okay to arrest them at night, which, of course, is preposterous, and it wouldn't stand court scrutiny at the federal level for a minute, according to Attorney Kate Wells. So we have this mighty weapon right now. We don't just have the conscience of the community, which kind of comes and goes. We don't just have the anger and the solidarity of people who are concerned about this issue and homeless people themselves, which rises and falls, and a lot of the time people just want to hide out because, you know, they want to kind of, they don't believe things can change, and they feel they're risking their own safety and their own security, and they're making themselves targets for the police by being a part of this kind of operation. Now we have a particularly unique opportunity to move on this issue. So if people are interested, I'd like to know about it. Again, 423-4833 is the number to call. I don't think it's worth wasting a lot of time calling the city council and so forth. If you want to, I think it's good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with calling the city council. But in the past, a lot of energy has been put into that. And I think it's good to do it just sort of in passing. Say, call me back. Tell me what you're doing on this issue, because it will make them nervous and more likely to pay some attention to what's going on. But the real thing they'll pay attention to is when they're faced with the choice, arrest us or let us continue to set up camp and sleep legally in a place that's safe where we can sleep together in a warm spot, even if it's only in a tent, you know, with some kind of makeshift sleeping bags. It's particularly important because they've just recently appropriated $700,000 for Parks and Rec Ranger Enforcement Expansion. And I'm going to play some more of that now. I played a bit of that at the last Bathrop Spears Broadside show that was actually a real show. We had a Sunday show that unfortunately didn't go out on the air, and so I didn't play any new stuff. I played an old show for last Sunday. But hopefully we are going out over the air. I'm assuming we are, and I'm sure as heck hoping we are. I think we are, because we've been getting incoming phone calls. Here is the final part of that last city council meeting 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago that concerned, that essentially gave over to Danette Shoemaker from the hands of Dick Wilson and the police chief, well, actually from the city council hands, but at the urging of the police chief and the city manager, Dick Wilson, essentially $700,000 without any accountability, without any specific plan or cost accounting of what they'd be spending it for. Just they want to expand CSO park ranger enforcement in park areas against essentially illegal campers. I mean, there are other things too, but mainly illegal campers. I put in a Public Records Act request to see what other illegal activity is actually going on. I got a reply that Danette Shoemaker had no records. She's the head of the Parks and Rec Department. I got this email back today. The only records she had was a kind of a three vague reports that they gave to the city council, but no records in terms of the specific citations, which I asked for, which they do have, but they're so far refusing to give me. We've already seen Ranger Wallace issuing at least a dozen illegal citations under the blanket ban. Or he gives people, I mean, you should, obviously, a citation under the blanket ban is illegal of any kind because it's unconstitutional, but he's issuing citations for hours that aren't covered. And see, the city cleverly says you can't cover up with a blanket between 11 and 8:30 in the morning, the coldest time of night, with the idea that this will make it more difficult for homeless people to survive during this area, so that'll drive them out of the area. Well, what Wallace has been doing is issuing tickets at other times under this ordinance, which, of course, are... there is no such law, so therefore it's bogus. And so here is the city council discussion of that $700,000 appropriation after the public comment period. If you want to hear the earlier discussion, you should go to the tape of a week ago, and you can catch old shows, and you can catch that archived show at huffsantacruz.org. And here is that tape.
Just wanted to bring us a little bit back to this agenda
Vice item Mayor Coonerty.
And note that there's been this effort over the last 30 years in Santa Cruz to create a huge amount of open space and a green belt and parks for our residents, and that was a tremendous legacy that was left to future generations. And now I think that this that the community is stepping forward with the passage of Measure H and saying we're going to maintain these open spaces and parks and make them usable for the whole community. And I think it's a fantastic next step as the city comes together and celebrates our open spaces and parks that make our community a wonderful place and worth living in. And that's really what this is about. It's about maintaining our open places and parks. And so thank you, Danette, and to Chief Scarry and everybody else who's been working on this, and we look forward to seeing the plan as it moves forward. And it was what the voters asked for. It's what the Measure H was promised, and now we're moving forward. And it's an exciting day.
Thank you. Ed?
Yes,
Councilmember Porter.
I'll join Brian's comments about this item. This item is about planning some staff positions that we need to plan. We had meetings with the public, one in particular over at the library, where we learned from our Parks Department that we had some really severe problems, some very dangerous problems, some big liability if we didn't do something about it. We had another meeting where we talked about what we would do if Measure H were to pass and we would fund these positions, and now Measure H has passed. So I think that's a very clear and logical order of steps. It's not as though this was any secret that we were going to do this. And this model of pairing an existing ranger with a police officer works very well.
Porter is talking about how it's... I was criticizing him earlier in the oral communication part of this item by saying there's been no notice in the paper about a $700,000 appropriation going to Parks and Rec for this, and there hasn't been. This was a 72-hour blind job. It was a sideswipe. It was something that came out of the darkness. Although it's true, they talked about it before. No figures, no plans were specifically presented to the public about this until this one item on the afternoon agenda, the $700,000 giveaway to Parks and Rec, to essentially increase the focus on criminalizing poor people in the Poganip without any kind of emergency shelter being provided to deal with the issue. So it's doubly stupid because it also runs afoul of the Jones decision. There's no discussion of that whatsoever.
It's actually problematic to have any individual go out into the Greenbelt all by themselves, so this is a better idea. And it's kind of sad that people want to turn this into a referendum about our park ranger's performance or to make insults against our park director, who I think has done a very good job on this. So I do want to comment that I think Mr. Golder's idea about our having a GPS is a good idea, and I hope we follow up on that, because it's such a low-cost thing to do to identify the location of problem sites or sites that need attention.
And Porter here again is, when he talks about criticizing the, or castigating, what do you say, insulting the park, the head of Parks and Rec. Actually, she wasn't being insulted. Her proposal was being criticized. And actually, I spoke with her, and she gave me the information that this hadn't gone through the Parks and Rec Commission, that it hadn't been presented to the public subsequent to the election, that, you know, it's that she hadn't talked to any homeless service providers about it or social service providers about it. These are all facts. And that there are no stats from the police department about the so-called extent of illegal activity that this was supposed to counter. All these were simply facts. And, of course, none of this is addressed by council members Coonerty or Porter.
For all the folks who spoke, I think it should be clear that to come when this item is here in front of us after all these steps I mentioned, the meetings that we've had and the discussion that council members have had with interested parties, and the formulation of this policy that's taken place over the last, it's got to be at least 6 or 8 months that it took to put this together. I mean, the good time to be taken seriously is during that time when those meetings are taking place, to enter into the discussion in some kind of a respectful way.
And, of course, that's exactly what we did. Porter is misstating what happened. We were at the meetings where it was publicly brought up, which were difficult to attend. They were special meetings in the day on the second floor of the library. At least one of them was the main meeting, where this was talked about a year before in April.
The good time, the good method of being heard is not to come up here at the last minute and say everything that we've done is wrong. I don't think that is a very effective way of doing things. So anyway, given all those things, I will move the staff recommendation for item 15.
Second. And
Mr. Burson, I'm just hoping that we can have the
Attorney John Burson,
that the motion respects the you know, the chain of command that's established in our charter, so the council is going to direct the city manager to work with the Parks Department and police chief.
That would be included.
I think that's the language, isn't it, in the recommendation?
No, you have the city council directed.
Okay, direct the city manager to.
Okay.
Switch it.
All right. So my motion is to direct the city, direct the director is what it says. So you want to correct that, to direct the city manager and the chief of police to work with the city manager.
No, city manager to work with their support and police.
Okay. to create the necessary positions needed to implement the Park Security Division.
What's being done here is it's inappropriate for the city council to directly tell a city staff person other than the city manager to proceed, rather tell the city manager to tell a city staff person, which is good. But what's interesting here is that the same argument Rotkin turns on its head when the police department comes up and suggestions are made that they stop surveilling political protests, that they be directed to do that through the city manager. Then we're suddenly told, oh, that can't be done because it violates our charter. You can't tell the police department what to do. Obviously, what you do is you can tell the city manager to tell the police department what to do. Here, however, when they're pursuing something they want to do, which is give the police department, in this case the Parks and Rec and the police department, more power to go after homeless people, they quickly do so by directing the city manager to do that.
Parks and Recreation and Police Departments.
Only briefly to say that this action not only fulfills our pledge to voters with the passage of Measure H, but also begins to restore some of the very deep cuts that were sustained by the Parks Department over the last 5 to 6 years, which is part of why Measure H was necessary. That's it.
Thank you, Rich.
Well, I just want to say one of the things that
Lynn Robinson,
really
the new council member.
Around. Not only is it the green belt areas where you have to actually go out and go into the open space, but even this is including our waterways. So, I mean, when we've got the heart of the river going through the city and neighborhood groups that had wanted to do help and clean up were literally unable to do that. Department heads were saying at that point in time it wasn't something that they could do. And this is kind of a testament to that we are at a point now where we're going to get it back on track, and then community groups will have those opportunities to be involved at that level.
It's a little obscure here about why community groups couldn't go out and volunteer to help. Unless Lynn Robinson is playing the terror card, suggesting that they were told it was too dangerous for people to go in the Parks and Rec because of the danger, I mean, into the Pogo Net, because of the dangerous campers. So I'm a little bit not clear on what she said. Lynn Robinson has not gotten back to me on a request for interviews since she originally adopted a very open attitude a month or two before the elections. It looks like maybe we have another example of the political process suddenly hotifying or elitizing or gentrifying or making inaccessible council members. We'll see whether that's true in the days ahead.
Again, I do think, I agree with this council in that we're taking a proactive approach, doing what the voters have been asking us to do. I've seen it firsthand with people that want to be engaged, help take us to that next level, and we're unable to do it because of these real negative impacts that we are experiencing. So,
again, real negative impacts, code word for homeless campers, code word for danger. This kind of language is doubly deceptive in that, of course, it stereotypes homeless people. It falsely sets them up as a problem. What they're really and what they're doing suggesting is that they need to be cleared out of the area, because that's what this is for. $700,000 is to clear them out. The money was supposed to go, this Measure H was supposed to go largely for dealing with roadways and taking care of potholes. Instead, massive amounts of money are going to the police department and police functions that essentially, again, criminalize poor people. If this were going to Parks and Rec to expand facilities, I'd say right on. If we're going to set up a program so homeless people could engage in self-cleaning in the Pogo Net, tidy camping, I'd say great. That's not what's happening.
I agree, too, with Ed's the idea that we can maybe be tracking some of these things that we weren't in certain ways before. Will be a good advantage for us to have that information. So
thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, Danette. And I certainly agree with everything I've heard, and the fact that
Mayor Emily Riley,
when it comes back to us, it will be a little more fleshed out, will also be something we're looking forward to seeing. So thank you. Any other discussion for the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, passes unanimously.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm afraid, caller, that I'm going to have to, I'll answer your call off the air. But tune in again on Sunday at 9:30. I'll be back, actually be back a little early, probably 8:30, in the middle of Thomas Levitt's show. We're going to be just playing an older tape Larry Hilliard, the attorney, talking about an older sleep out 10 years ago and try to learn some lessons from that sleep out. In the meantime, a call to 423-HUFF will get you me, or I will get back to you. Give me a call then. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside. Stay tuned for From the Cream to the Dregs, coming up with Uncle Dennis.
We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. They say it's to protect you while they try to dispossess you of the right to decide between wrong or right, to openly discuss what politicians hide. They want to keep their secret plans from the public eye. We gotta keep our fire burning, keep our spirits bright. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. Money got no children, and bombs ain't for building. Killing ain't no way to make a peaceful day, as all of God's children can easily explain. We gotta keep our fires burning, keep our spirits bright. Stand up and speak for what we know is right. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. I see days ahead. Kiss my children into bed. All across the planet I see that everything is fine.
Yeah.
Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. We got the power and the will, and we'll do it for our children. For the warmongers and the corporate whores in the history books with the dinosaurs. I claim my power, I claim my rights. And no dirty tricks are gonna change my mind. I'm gonna rise up, rise up, rise up. I'm gonna rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. 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 Rise up.
I'm gone away. Oh, yeah! just be. Let me one time, baby. Yeah, my knees got weak. Let me two times, girl. Last week, all through the week. Let me two times.
Yes, The Doors from quite a ways back there. Love Me Two Times. I'm Uncle Dennis. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and out on the wide weird web at www.freakradio.org. We will... of course, be playing all that wonderful music from the 60s and the 70s, and we'll have a Brew of the Week opening here in just a little while. And then, of course, we will have the Earth First Update at 9 o'clock, and we will have our Spotlight group tonight at 10 o'clock. And I can tell you right now, tonight's Spotlight group is going to be the Dixie Dregs. And they were here in Santa Cruz last night. I'm afraid some reason I didn't check the papers for the last couple of weeks out of town and stuff like that. But I didn't realize they were going to be in town until after the show, or I would have said something. Anyway, Steve Morse Band and the Dixie Dregs were at the Catalyst last night. And a fine time was had by all. And we'll have a wider report on that show coming up right around 10 o'clock. And then, of course, we will feature an hour of the music of the Dixie Dregs. As if you didn't have enough last night, we're going to play some stuff that they didn't play last night. So anyway, stay tuned to Free Radio because it's all happening here. The Dixie Dregs not only played a bunch of their stuff, but they also played a cover of this one by Led Zeppelin.